chip on your
account. How are we going to restore 15 to 20 million jobs?
What about both? I am your future.
Isn't it about time for a change?
We are national leaders.
AmericanWorkersRadio.com. You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860 AM, serving Philadelphia and the entire tri-state area. As always, I ask that you go to your telephone, invite family members and friends to tune in if they live in our broadcast range of 860. If they don't, go to your internet, send them an email, and invite them to tune in to AmericanWorkersRadio.com and click on the Listen Live link. Well, today we have a very interesting show prepared for you, and I want to mention also that if you receive the email this morning, you'll receive another email this afternoon with a copy of today's rebroadcast so you can share it with family members and friends. Here we are, the first Wednesday of the new year. Wow, it's going to be a great year. And I'm pleased to say that we have all of our panel members on today, which include, as you know, the well-known Mark Andel, founder of the Made in America store, Larkin Connolly, the East Coast vice president of SCORE, and also Rich Logis, the principal of RJL Technology Integration. Our engineer is Henry Chaplinsky. I'm Michael Blihash, proud to be your host, and we will have a guest today. Ed Bezdetsky is going to be with us, and boy, he is going to be a well-spoken guest. Well, ladies and gentlemen, as I said, we're a few days into the new year, and we're asking everyone to help us make 2017 a historic year for American workers. We need to see more industries in the USA. We need to see the rebirth of small businesses and jobs so that Americans are part of America's workforce and will be able to support themselves and their families. You know, as I looked around during the Christmas holidays, the Americans spend billions and billions of dollars on electronics, toys, clothing, and other gift items that were largely made outside the USA. It's depressing to see that. In fact, I don't want to be one to complain, but when you go shopping for kids' toys, please do look at the labels and honor our 2017 theme, support the American-made label. As I look at the Mickey Mouse Club and I look at Fisher-Price toys and I got all these advertisements from Staples, everything is made foreign. However, I did receive this from one of our listeners, and Consolidated Plastics, located in Stowe, Ohio, are 99% American-made. And you can check them out on the internet by going to consolidatedplastics.com. Now, they do a lot of floor mats and stuff like that, but and they also engrave your floor mat with your name or your company's name. So please do support our advertisers. And when you go shopping, make it a big deal that you're in the store and you're trying to look for American-made, as our panel and I have been pushing for so many years. I want to also say that our campaign theme allows us to focus on what we've been talking about for a long time, and that is getting 50% of everything sold in America being made in America again. As I went out for the Christmas holidays, I saw so many products on the shelves that were made in America for decades, now made foreign with the same packaging. They just took the products, make them overseas, bring them over to America stores, put them on the shelves, and the American people, without knowing what is going on, all of a sudden pick them up, and the rest is history. Now, with so many changes taking place as a result of the November election and the president-elect directing so much of his attention to businesses, I'm pleased that we're going to be able to start off this year with this particular subject. And in fact, we'll be welcoming our guest in just a few minutes. But what this thing with Mr. Trump shows is that many of the presidents of the past simply didn't do their job. They didn't do their job. I mean, if one gentleman can come in and all of a sudden push 5, 10, 20 companies to stay here in the USA, Where were presidents before him doing their job? Today, as a result of poor leadership, we have over 70,000 businesses that decided to move overseas during the last 25 years. And our theme this year is to support the American-made label. And with that, I'm going to ask each of our panel members to introduce themselves, and then I'm going to call on Ed Bezdetsky to introduce himself. How are you doing, Mark?
Excellent, excellent. Mike, Henry, Larkin, Rich, Happy New Year's. Very excited about 2017. You just hit a lot on the head there, Mike. We've got a president that actually cares and gets it. You know, I was just telling Henry before we started, you know, a lot of people ask me, are you still doing that thing? And I joke with my brother-in-law, Rob, yeah, are we still doing that thing? I said, yeah, we're going to be doing this thing for a long time, buying and selling 100% Made in America products. So, Mike, we had a great holiday run. We call it the 30-day run from Thanksgiving to Christmas. Our General Welding and Fabricating is still had its toughest year out of 30 last year because the oil and mining industry is down. The juice plants, we sold three apple juice presses compared to 75 the year before, our company we build for. So economy's tough, but very excited about this year, very enthusiastic. A new president, but a president that gets it. He's already showing that. I'm glad to see Ford staying in our country. The folks in Michigan, it's an action plan, just like the Made in America store. We're an action plan. It's not lip service. You come in, you buy something 100% Made in America. I just told all my managers, we have seven brick-and-mortar stores. I said, don't forget, we're creating and saving jobs in the United States of America by increasing American manufacturing, by selling retail products made here. We're stressing out our vendors, and they're actually telling us we can't keep up. You know, we can't do that order on time. We need more time. So that tells me, Mike and crew, that we're stressing them out. They got to buy. They got to hire more people. They got to buy more equipment if it's automation. One way or another, we're causing them to grow, and that is what we do.
And I know that Ed is on the line, and I just want to tell you something, Ed, that Mark Andel is a person who you have to have everything in that product or even wrapping the product 100% American made, including the staple that keeps the packaging together. So we'll be with Ed in 1 minute. But first, Rich Logis, how was everything with you on the first few days of the year?
Michael, good morning. And Mark, Larkin, Henry, to all of our listeners, and to welcome Ed coming on. You know, Michael, meet the new year, same as the old year, rocking and rolling, still crazy, getting crazier. If you thought we were nuts last year, listeners, just get ready. You ain't seen nothing yet. And Mark, you know, I'm laughing here. You still doing that thing? I mean, it makes it sound like you're practicing voodoo or something. Hey, Mark, you still practicing voodoo?
Rich, I get asked all the time. It's like, is Rich still drinking coffee? I said, of course.
Amongst other things that I put in there now, this is a new year, new me. I turned 40 in a few weeks. You know, I believe in quality, not quantity. Live your however many years we're on this earth until we go to wherever's next. You know, live it to the fullest, country and family, and if God, if you're inclined, you know, if you're so religious, and if you're not, you know, then God bless you anyway. So, I think, Michael, that certainly there is more than I've noticed in years past a certain, I'll call it a cautious optimism, coming into the new year. When it comes to not only national politics, but what I'm starting to notice a little bit growing, which is a point that Larkin has brought up a lot in the past, which I totally agree with, which is about all politics being local. I think local politics is also an area that has been, for a lot of us, and I would include myself there as well, long neglected. And many of the forces that propelled someone like Hillary Clinton to be the nominee of a major party, someone who was the most bribable, extortable, blackmailable candidate in our nation's history, a lot of those forces work on the local level. So we got to have eyes, Mark, all around our head right now. And, you know, we start getting these things right, you're going to see Made in America take off even more. But I'm just laughing about, you know, still doing that thing. You know, he's still doing that thing, definitely.
They want to sneak a product in, Rich. Are you still doing that thing that you were doing, or can I just sell my foreign product? No, I still love America.
Larkin, how is everything with you?
Well, good morning, everybody, to the panel, Michael, Henry Chaponsky, the marvelous engineer that he is, probably one of the country's best. Good morning to everybody. Happy New Year. It is, in fact, a new year, 2017. I want you all to go to bed at night thinking about how and when you're going to pay your taxes, or at least file them. So everything's been great. I had a wonderful New Year. I rung it in with my family, which is, you know, always the approved way of doing things. I wanted to make a comment about Rich's comment on he's all for quality and not quantity. I have a somewhat of a different take on that. I like to strive for quality, and then I go after the quantity. Once they give you the price, knock them dead. And Mark knows that. Once you get a price, you know, stretch the supplier to the ultimate end and make them perform. I also wanted to change something in 2000. This is going to be a new concept that I'm going to work on. You know, I always say all politics are local. And that's, you know, kind of true. Everything starts on the local level. If you try to run a national campaign without respect for local citizenry, you end up with Hillary Clinton is what you end up with. You don't go to Wisconsin, you don't go to Ohio, you don't play all of the middle American states because you think you already have them in the bag and you don't respect the local. That's what you get. You get Hillary Clinton. But I'm going to introduce a new concept that we're going to talk a lot about this year. And that is, in addition to all politics being local, all politics are personal. Everybody has a personal take on their political stand and their political wishes, and we can't disregard the fact that they all start on a local level, but they're all really personal to each person who, you know, holds those feelings. So, happy New Year. I'd knock them dead. It's going to be a huge year. I'm another year older. That happened. Everybody sung birthday to me last weekend. I am now 57, and counting. What a lie that is. I don't even remember 57, but I'm old enough to know better. So happy New Year to everybody, and let's knock them dead this year.
And thank you, Larkin. Thank you, guys. And now I want to introduce our very distinguished guest. I wanted him to hear a little bit from our panel members. And now I want to hear from a man who I've come to know as not only distinguished, but a man with ethics. He's an attorney. He's a very important person. I'm going to ask Ed Bezdetsky to introduce himself and tell us a little bit about.
Good morning, gentlemen. This is actually the second time I've ever been on the radio. The first was debating a gentleman by the name of Dan Mulday back in the 70s on Bob Grant's program. I don't know if you remember Bob Grant, but he was a personality that was eventually removed from the radio because he was too caustic. But I'm privileged to be here today. I'm in my law office in Toms River, New Jersey. My history goes back as a worker because I've been an American worker since I'm 12 years old. Used to box eggs at 4 a.m. in the morning in Hoboken, New Jersey, and go door to door knocking on apartments saying, Eggman is selling dozens of eggs to people at the time, and we didn't have all these supermarkets and grocery stores to go to, so I'm dating myself. But my history goes back as being a worker. I remember back in the 70s, Lou Alameda was the president of Local 701 in New York. He made a statement at a meeting one time that corporations no longer have any allegiance to the United States, even though they were born there. And that has been the problem ever since, as far as I'm concerned, with labor. I was a member of Teamsters Local 560 and 701, working my way through college and law school and eventually separating myself from the Teamsters, even though they did a very good service to me. I was able to earn a very good living and work my way through school and raise a family at the same time. I do recall the problems with Made in America. The Electrical Workers Union here in New Jersey at one time put a big sign up, said, no foreign vehicles permitted to park in our parking lot. And that was a message back then in the 70s, and we didn't learn from that. I go up and down the highway, and what do I see? I see the Crooked H, Hyundai. And they're just outselling our cars, and that is killing our labor base. Now, you would think that the word union and small business is anathema to each other, but I've learned over the years, after having been a shop steward working my way up, running a barn of 150 dock workers and drivers, that business and union really do have a relationship. Going back to Nixon, it's when the unions actually voted for Nixon, went against their hierarchy that wanted them to vote Democrats. The same thing happened this time. You take Richard Trumka, who was a miner, and he was backing Hillary Clinton, of all people, who said that she was putting the miners out of work. And he backed Hillary Clinton. He's finally come full circle and now backing Donald Trump. But I think it's just clear how unions and their hierarchy are not in sync with the rank and file, because that's who put Donald Trump into office today, were the working people. So that's where my roots are, going back, having worked my entire life. There's dignity through work, and I think all these people that are in the inner city have been totally sold out by the Democrats, giving them not a hand up, but a handout. That's a cliche. And when you say all politics are local, I think that was attributed to Tip O'Neill, the former speaker, who's no longer with us. But I agree with that. All politics are local, and that's how Hillary, thank goodness, blew the election. I don't know where we would be today. A lot of people said they'd move out to New Zealand, myself included. But, yeah, I'm privileged to be talking on a radio station that's, you know, for American workers and made in America. But I think there has to be more strong union representation throughout the big corporations, not small business. They can never afford union workers. But these big businesses are going to go where the cheap labor is. And we all know that it's China, it's Japan. And our politicians will sell us out every time. Do I trust Donald Trump? The answer is no. Do I want to give him an opportunity? The answer is absolutely yes. I voted for him. I would hope that Donald Trump keeps true to his word that he is going to make America great again. But the only way you're going to do that, Michael, and your panel, is to support the American worker. Our middle class, which I was a member of, I've been very fortunate to have, you know, started my practice back in the beginning of the 80s. Been very successful working for businessmen and been able to maybe rise above the middle class. Maybe I'm up in that higher bracket based on my income. But the bottom line is I still have my roots in American labor. And that's my position. I think we should all look to buy. But how do you look, Michael? How do you buy American when you go to the shelves and you see nothing's made here anymore?
Well, that's the thing, Ed, that I mentioned earlier. I'm looking at all this beautiful packaging that my granddaughter received, the Mickey Mouse Club and everything else, all these Laugh with the Bears, Learn with the Bears from Fisher Price. These are all American companies now located everywhere but America. Hopefully, because the new president is so focused on jobs in America, maybe we're going to see a reversal of what we've been witnessing for the last 30 years. You know, Staples is another situation comedy. You go into Staples and I ask for this. Yes, we have it right over there. Take me over. Show me. I said, where is it made? They all look at me like I have 47 heads on. But then they say, oh, it's not made in America. I didn't know that. I said, well, you should pay attention to this, because this is going to be where you're going to lose your job in the future, because everybody will buy online and forget about the brick and mortar stores.
You know what Staples is that's Romney.
Yes.
Romney's group that came in and took over Staples. And thank goodness we don't have Romney to deal with. And again, I think Donald Trump has come out with the right message. And I think that the Republican Party is going to try to kill the messenger. They're not going to really go along with Donald Trump because he's going to try to drain the swamp. They are the swamp. There are politicians that they go into politics. Harry Reid's a prime example. Here's a man that lived in a three-bedroom home, goes into politics and comes out a multi-multi-millionaire. And his son, who had given favored contracts through Reid, multi-multi-millionaires. How does that happen? Well, the answer is simple. Hillary Clinton showed us all. It was exposed how it happens. Donald Trump is very wealthy. I'm hoping that he doesn't need to go that route, that he can in some way make America great again. He's already proven before he's even the president to come in and, I guess, carry a big stick like Teddy Roosevelt. carry a big stick and force these companies to come back home and put your money back where it belongs, where you made it originally, instead of running overseas and getting, it's a pejorative term, coolie labor. Because that's what it's all about. It's all about where the bottom line is. The companies that I worked for when I was in trucking, the bean counters came in, took over a beautiful company created by a gentleman by the name of Smith, who, when he got out of the military, had one truck. He said the sheriffs used to chase him up and down the highway. He eventually grew that company into a Fortune 500, and he sold out to a company I'm not going to name on the radio, but it's a fact. They came in, and they destroyed the company. They just started scavenging and selling off the brick and mortar, taking advantage of write-offs. After Snuffy Smith treated us so well, I mean, every month we would get green stamps, if anybody remembers what green stamps are. Back when I drove a truck working through college, I would, every month for safe driving, get green stamps, and he gave us badges with jewelry in them. What a gentleman he was, and he knew what workers were, and he appreciated the workers. But he got up in age, like in close to 80, on the New York Stock Exchange. We even ended up with stock. They gave us stock options, which were beautiful. And he sold out for multi-millions, and I don't blame him. But what happened is the bean counters came in, and it was the bottom line. Let's look at the bottom line. Don't look at the people. Just look at what we can make off of the people's backs.
Well said, Ed. Just look at the bottom line. Don't look at the people. That's what we have to change in 2017.
Well, I thank you for the privilege of being on the radio. Like I said, I'm in here in my office in Toms River going out to court this afternoon, and I've not given back. I've gained so much from working. I haven't given back to the community. I didn't want to get in politics. Most of the politicians are lawyers. What they say, get rid of the lawyers, well, then you get rid of government. But that's another problem. You have too many lawyers involved in the political system. We need more regular people.
I'm going to ask Rich Logis to give you a welcome, Ed. Rich, what do you have to say to our special guest?
Hey, Ed, how you doing? It's Rich Logis here. And, again, thanks for coming on, sharing all of that. You know, the why about a lot of the things that have happened when it comes to our labor and Made in America, we talk an awful lot about those topics on this show, and the why, it's very important to recognize that and not forget it. But I think I'm hearing in a lot of what you're saying that at this point now, we know that what's done is done, and we know that there's really a hell of a lot of work in front of us to keep politicians, where we have a new Congress coming in, to keep them, we have to keep them focused on why they were elected. And the reason, the number one, I really think the number one issue in this election, and, you know, Ed, maybe you feel differently, and that's fine, but I really think the number one issue in this election was American sovereignty. If you look at sovereignty in this country, we are the most sovereign nation in the history of the world. Our sovereignty is the root of, it's the foundation of free enterprise, of our constitutional freedoms. And that issue, first and foremost, I think was at the forefront for this election, because everything else is a derivative of our sovereignty. Trade deals that seem to have other countries as much in mind as America, trade deals were at the forefront. Our national security was at the forefront. The very, very, I would say, frighteningly naive foreign policy recently of our country was at the forefront. If you really think about what ties all those issues together, it's American sovereignty. You know, the rest of the world flees where they live to move to America. We don't flee here to move to other places. So that's just, as I'm hearing what you're saying, I'm thinking, I'm reminding myself of a lot of the bullet points, and I respect and appreciate that you're very much forward thinking, as we are on this show as well.
Well, I agree with you. Sovereignty is a key, but then they label us. I mean, liberals love to label people, and they label us as xenophobic, isolationists. And we're not. I mean, we're still there as a world power, and that's what Donald Trump wants to really, like Teddy Roosevelt said, you know, carry a big stick, talk softly. But Donald Trump's doing the other. He's doing both. He's talking loudly and carrying a big stick and telling the world that we're coming back, and we're coming back strong, and we're going to be the power that we used to be for the last 10 years, and that includes Bush. He's got to be included in this. We have to come back and keep our politicians in tow. Look what happened with the last time Congress promised that they're coming in and they're going to change, and they never did. Nobody held their feet to the fire. That's why people talked against Boehner, and he bailed, and against Ryan, rightfully so, because that new Congress that came in, they didn't do their job. But look what Trump just did. Wasn't that a keynote when he told Congress, get back to work and stop this frivolous stuff with ethics? I mean, he took them to task. So maybe he is the guy we need, the guy which is going to be the strong force, just like a Teddy Roosevelt.
Yeah, and that
power
that
structure
point,
on what Roosevelt did.
What you're mentioning there regarding the ethics.
Yeah, I agree with you. Sovereignty is a key, and let's keep our freedom. I mean, if anything, I am. I'm more than a conservative Republican. I'm one that goes back to John Stuart Mill's. The sole purpose for which mankind is warranted, individually or collectively, and restricting the rights of one of its members is for self-protection and for no other reason. That's why we don't need big government. We need small government, and politicians toe the line.
And I know that Larkin Connolly is waiting to say a few words to our special guest, Ed Dasdetsky.
Yes. Welcome, Ed.
Thank you.
I'm not going to be ever thrown off the air for being toxic, I don't think. But if there's a toxic member on the panel, I guess it's me. So before I say anything, I'd like to say to you that anything that comes out of my mouth is in the spirit of healthy discussion. And nothing I say is personal. I've probably frightened the tomatoes out of you, but that's not what I meant to do. You know, I think when we sit here and think about where we are right now, I think if I use both hands in enumerating the people who are responsible for the United States of America being in the position it's in right now, I might, if I'm very fortunate, have one finger left to pick my nose. I say. You know, and I've
forewarned us.
I grew up politically in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, in a family that was Irish, Catholic, and overwhelmingly and ridiculously Democratic. And when I announced to my family that I was registered as a Republican, it was all I could do to find a good meal at that address. They really didn't want to hear from me. But here's the deal. I came to Philadelphia. I got involved. I was a chairman of ward chairman. I was involved in every election in the last 20 years or the 18 years that I lived in Philadelphia. And I saw union antics firsthand. I witnessed them. And they, to me, are as egregiously at fault for where we stand right now as anybody. To tell me that an electrical worker, that somebody who knows how to wire a house in this economy today needs to be paid $75 or $78 an hour is goofball stuff. It's why we are where we are. And that's the part they played in getting us in this corner. Now, I have to be very careful that nobody in the city is listening because they don't get very – they're not very happy when they hear what I have to say. So the unions, that's fine. They want to collaborate with our movement and they want to get involved. Well, they've got a little bit of that IBEW. They got to get out of this damn city and they got to get back to work. And they got to quit trying to run our convention center with egregious – $185 bills for screwing in a light bulb. It's just ridiculous. And until we get that under check, we have nowhere to go.
I agree with you. I mean, look, I was a shop steward. I worked my way up, all the way up to the point where I was going up to be a business agent, but I saw too many people going to prison, and I said, I'm not corrupt. I'm ethical. I fought the I was on the front page of the Hudson Dispatch when we tried to oust the mob that was in Local 560, and there's a movie coming out soon with Martin Scorsese as the director producer, and you got a couple of very big names in there like De Niro, Joe Pesci. It's about the local I belong to, and I fought those people, and it didn't bode well for me personally. Actually, I had an FBI agent told me that they were monitoring me when there was an election that we had at the federal courthouse, and they were watching that I was going to be okay, but I never took that into consideration. Yes, unions have gone, but it's not the workers. It's the hierarchy that has destroyed what unionism really should be. There were too many people involved with graft and corruption. And I was once told that if Jesus Christ came off the cross and became president of Teamsters, they'd find him guilty too. So there's a lot to be said about what I've learned as being a staunch union member, how you can't put your own business out of business. You got to work with business. And that's not happening with unions, especially in Philly. Look, 107, notorious Teamsters local. Notorious. And as far as the electrical workers, I'm not an electrical worker, but sometimes they go overboard with what they're demanding of businesses, and business can't operate. And where do they push off that $75 an hour? Look, my brother was in the mill workers. They'd press a button on a generator and go home and come back and shut it off and get paid for the day. Was that right? Absolutely not. And I was totally against stuff like that and still am today. But I believe that unions did give some middle-class people an opportunity to progress.
And, you know, you're right, Ed, and I would have liked to have seen the unions be the first to speak up once many of the businesses started to move out of the United States of America. But they held out, and as did American workers and America's consumers. How can you walk into a store, look at the products you're picking up, look at the labeling, and find it's all over the world, but except where you live, where your family needs to work and make a living? And that's some of the things that we do. And in my efforts going out into the community, which I'll be in several events this weekend again, and I'm looking forward to hearing from the people who are listening in, I want to see people start to pick up the packaging more than ever. We have generated millions of new people to support the Buy American Made campaign, and it's been a success. Curtis Ellis mentioned to me, he works, he is the head of the workers' movement. He said to me, you've been stoking the fires of change for some years, Michael. And that you should take, you know, a great honor for that. You should feel very proud of that. I said, I do. And I said, with the new administration coming in and you being involved, I'm looking for some real positive things to come about because you are part of the jobs movement in America, and we're going to bring all of those people who are part of the jobs movement to the table and let them speak directly to the people in the industries and maybe even take it right to the president's desk. We got to do something to change our own situation, just as another member of our panel, Mark Andel, who's the founder of the Made in America store. Mark, I want you to have your time with our special guest, Ed Bezdetsky.
Yeah, how you doing, Ed? Great to hear what you're about and where you started when you said you started selling eggs at 4 in the morning.
Yep, 12 years old.
It reminded me of I used to find golf balls near a local golf course and then clean them in the bathtub, get in trouble for my parents, and then my dad would sell them in egg cartons at Ford, you know. That was my first, I didn't know that, entrepreneurial start. But, you know, my father worked UAW Ford. He worked Local 6 as an iron worker. He came up poor. He kicked coal off the rail car, and my mother was given away by her parents at 5 years old. And, you know, my father signed her out of the home at 18. Kind of a neat story. But my dad did real well as a middle class. You know, we had an extra car, and we had a swimming pool. So my father, being Local 6, he was the only white guy in the Indian gang. You know, and back then, you talk Made in America products 30, 40 years ago. He climbed the red iron. They laughed that I use man lifts at my General Welding and Fabricating as my other business, and because they all climbed the red iron. But they used to pull buildings down, and in that day, if you brought a foreign product, you wouldn't go out looking the same. You know? You know, my father's 80 years old today, and he still supports me. My dad and mom got great parents and family. But, you know, what you said, you get it. You started New Jersey. You know, I see what you went through, what we're talking about. And I like how you put it. There's a time the workers, it reminds me when my Sue, I got three women here that run my life, and she sent me to UAW to be a, they asked me when I opened the Made in America store back in 2010. I was blessed with world news and a lot of exposure, but one thing came out of it. They wanted me to be a speaker at the UAW conference in Dubuque, Iowa, so I flew in because I never say no to Sue. And I was surrounded by tough guys. I'm like, oh, boy, you know, Made in America is not union. My General Welding's not. But what's neat is my General Welding, I had the local six hall put up my building, and they compensated the difference in what I would pay somebody non-union, and I allowed them to put in my building, which was a neat story. But anyways, I showed up with Denny Williams, ended up going to dinner with Denny Williams, who headed the UAW, second in command, and he was talking about taking out the port in, I believe it was Australia at the time, and how India, they built a GM, but they can't get them to wear boots on their feet because leather, you know, the cow is a sacred animal. And here I am. I was kind of nervous. I'm like, boy, I got to do this speech. And when I mentioned Made in America at that speech, I was right next to Denny. I showed the World News segment I was on, and then I did the speech, Why Made in America Matters. These guys were cheering. They hugged me more than Denny at the time. And at that point, Barack Obama was running for the second term. And they were all booing. They had the silhouettes of Barack Obama, and they were booing. And they said, no, don't look at the rearview mirror. We got to look forward. He's going to do it the next 4 years. But it reminds me of what you were saying, Ed. You know, they didn't get the job done. You know, my father grew up Democratic. I'm Republican now. But, you know, it's a mix. But we needed a qualified businessman and leader. And maybe we do have that in Donald Trump. But I love the change and the hope that he's given people now. Because you got to break the system. I have I'm up to 7,000 products now, 100% made in our country, support 486 privately owned American businesses. We've been rocking and rolling for 6 years now. We're pretty proud of what we do. And but our products got to be 100% made in our country. I carry three letters of authenticity. I run military projects, so I use the same certifying process as my military projects I do for Northrop Grumman. So it's a pretty neat concept. You'd like our store, what we're about. But we have nothing that plugs in, not one item that plugs in, and nothing that takes a battery out of the 7,000 products that we can sell at our Made in America stores, which is sad and a shame. It's a 30-plus year mistake. I tell everybody we've been to the moon. We got to that white spot. We can't build one item in our country that I can sell that plugs in. So, you know, I love what you stand for. I love how you sound. You came from working with your hands, and that's what we support, and that's what we got to get back to.
I agree. Back to the roots, because, you know, Obama never signed a paycheck. He never worked for a living, and he was just somebody that was there at the right time in the right place, and they promoted him, and he did nothing for the country. It's hoping that Donald Trump will be the new breath of fresh air, but I believe the union hierarchy has got to get back the basics and work with companies. Like you said, if there's a site where you're putting up a building and the owner putting up the building cannot afford to pay the trades, but have them come in and work out a deal, you know, less monies, but at least put guys to work. Yeah. Instead of digging your heels in the ground and putting up a big blown up rat, and you know, that doesn't work. The wrong mentality with people that are in control of unions.
It's funny, Ed, in New York, they're mandating a $15 an hour minimum wage, so we just took a 70-cent increase December 31st, and I thought, Rich, you would love it. It's probably one of these people driven to school in their armored car, and they've got the armed security at the gates, and they didn't work the holidays like I did. But, you know, I don't know who thought of that, but it's kind of like, Larkin, what you say. You can't pay a $7,500 an hour for certain things. It doesn't make any – it's not common sense. It just doesn't work. You got to do the math. It goes back to the lemonade stand process, right?
Yeah. Well, I represent major contractors here in New Jersey that can afford all the trades, and you know, but they're making, like on the Parkway, a $200 million project that they're big enough that they can take and pay the trades. That's fine. You've still got guys that will go out on a job site – press a button to run a generator, and I won't tell you the local, but I know it, you know, press a button and come back at the end of the day and press a button again, and they get paid for the day. That to me makes no sense as far as business.
Yeah,
they've
got
to learn to work together, whether they will or not. But what Donald Trump is doing is forcing these corporations to at least have a conscience that, look, you made your monies here. They really did make their monies here. They started here. And that's what Louis Alameda, who I had nothing but great respect for him, as a very good speaker back in the 70s, and he knew what was happening. He said, they have no allegiance to us. And it was a very good local, but now they're struggling. The checks that I get on my pension are minimal now because they're all going out of – there's nobody supporting it. The pyramid has been reversed. It's standing on its head. Nobody's working. Nobody's paying the contributions. And I don't need their pension check. I mean, I've been very successful in my practice. For more than 30 years now, I've been practicing law and construction. And litigation, and that's what I do. So I just hope that Donald Trump will do what he says he promised to do. He's already showing me, before he's even the president, that he's already taken that stick and starting to wave it a little bit.
And you know, Ed, I'm very glad you said that, because many of the broadcasters, our weekly commentaries are featured on 20 radio stations, and I'll say that many of them are saying, Michael, all of you guys have to keep your hands on the buttons so that the people in Washington know that the small people, the you and I's, are out here, and we want the president to do his job. I mean, no matter who he says has to be put on the table, on a chopping block, too bad. Let's get it going, because we've wasted 30 years. As Mark said, this has been a 30-year mistake. All of our industries are gone. The good stuff, whether it was union or small shops, individual stores, what are they working on now that's American-made? Not too many things. In fact, as I go around to the stores, I'm not welcome in a lot of stores because they can't throw me out, but I'm not welcome because I start picking up the stuff and I influence other customers. Oh, look at that. That's made. How can these greeting cards be made here or there and not in America? People look and they say, oh, I didn't realize it's not made in America. It looks so beautiful. And I said, sure, they've outsmarted, they've outfoxed us. And now we are finished and we have to depend on a Trump to come in and shake us up. He's one person, but one person can really do a shakeup, as you know, Ed.
Yep. So it can happen. And I think what he said was this was a movement, and he was absolutely correct. It wasn't about Donald Trump. It was about the people that had enough. And like you said, now it's happened. It's over. It's done. We're like Rip Van Winkle. We fell asleep, and now all of a sudden we woke up. So it is a movement, and hopefully we can keep the people moving again and keeping the politicians in Washington a little less corrupt.
Right. And, you know, Larkin, I'm going to go right to you. That is why our theme for 2017 is so important. Support the American-made label. If it's not American-made label, listeners, please bypass it, look around, shop around, and make sure the shopkeeper knows that you're looking for American-made so we can reverse the nightmare we've found ourselves. Yes, Larkin.
So, Ed, you know, in deference to my, you know, earlier comments, I stand very firmly behind the Made in America issue. I have a little bit different bent because I think that the problem, I'm pragmatic, and my association with SCORE over the last 4 years has taught me that it's one thing to give something lip service, but you've got to attack the problem. You've got to understand what the problem is and how you fix it. And walking into a store and turning your back on a label isn't really an issue. That just hurts the storekeeper. So now we've got two parties hurt. We've got to train them to look a little bit deeper for their supplies and have a little bit of respect for the American worker. But again, they can't be selling us a T-shirt for $39.95 when everybody can go to Target and buy one for $9.95. Somewhere along the line, we've got to change that mix. And I think the only way you do that, the only suggestion, the only pragmatic answer that I've had to this issue is that we've got to stop calling American workers workers and start calling them partners. The only way we're going to get the supply chain back in effect in this country, the only way we're going to create that supply chain is by creating the companies that make those products that are the supply chain. We want to make a toaster in America. There's no company anywhere that's going to do each one of those component parts to have a toaster made in America. You buy the housing, you buy the electronics, you buy the wire, you buy the plug, and that all needs to come from companies that create those jobs and make those parts in this country. And if, you know, nobody can survive in this country at $15 an hour. Are you kidding? That's absolute. $15 an hour is ridiculous. It's still too low. It still should be an entry-level job for when we were back there packing eggs. We should be making some sort of a minimum wage in order to grow up through the system. But if we take those workers and we tell them, listen, you now are going to be a part owner of this company. You're now going to be involved in what it is that we create, so that the harder you work, the harder we work, the more pragmatic we are, the better quality that we produce, And the more prepared we are to meet the marketplace, you're going to make ownership. You're going to, you talk about the American dream. That's it.
I understand what you're saying, and they tried that back in the 70s called ESOP. It was the employee stock option plan, and all the trucking companies who are no longer in business, they're all out of business. You have nothing but people that don't belong on the highway driving an 18-wheeler. That's what I started driving. I still keep my CDL. I don't know why. When they look at it, they say, well, you still have a CDL. I said, yeah, I don't know why. Maybe I'll stop practicing law and go back to driving a truck after 30 years. But the bottom line is we tried that with all of the companies to save them, and it didn't work. And we did go ESOP. We did have the employee stock option where we reduced our pay. But what happened was we had so much competition with anti-union companies, and one of the biggest ones was overnight trucking, staunch anti-labor. Look at FedEx. Right now, FedEx, Mr. Smith, who started his company with his thesis when he was in graduate school, and they laughed at him, the professors, and he grew FedEx to what it is today. He's anti-union. If he learns to work with labor together, give them a, you know, a little bit more incentive, like you said, that's an incentive. When you say, hey, I'm part of you and I'm part of the company and we're working together, I agree with that concept. We tried it, but we tried it too late. It was just too late to save the companies. They're all gone. All these big companies, the only ones left is Yellow Freight and Roadway, which combined together, and they're struggling. UPS, that's the biggest trucking company in the entire United States. They're all union. And because the law firm, who is in Philly, who came to me when I was my first year in law school, I was on the dean's list, they solicited me to come to work for them. And when I went into work, and they hired me at a very good rate as a clerk, and I looked at what I had to do. I was going against labor, and I said, I can't do it in my conscience. I had to leave. I passed up the second largest law firm in Philly and left and said, I can't go against the people that I've been part of all these years. But the bottom line was UPS has their people paid a good wage, the good benefits, and they get along very well. That law firm represents that UPS nationwide, big firm, and they get along very well. So it can happen. And if it happens with FedEx, all those workers who are scurrying about trying to make a living and working too many hours, that'll work. But I agree, it's got to be a partnership between labor and ownership, but not small business. There's no way small business can afford to pay a union worker. It just can't happen. I agree, $15 is poverty wage. How do you live on that? I don't know. I was a kid, 12 years old. I can, you know, I have my parents to rely on. I could never have lived on the wages I made selling eggs. So how do you get to that point? You're right. You're pragmatist. Try to work towards it. Let's just try to get America back again because we've lost it, believe me.
And, you know, Ed,
so
we've been...
Your trucking example also assumes that, you know, there's an adversarial kind of relationship between the union and the trucking company. I'm not sure that we can afford to allow that to exist. Everybody's got to take a deep breath, and we've got to come up with a way of solving the problem. And I remember ESOPs better than I ever want to. But I take a look at the best grocery store chain in the country. Well, it's one of them, because I know Hannaford. I'm not Hannaford, but the one out of Syracuse is a great chain. But one of the most successful chains in the country is Publix down here. And Publix in this country is the largest employee-owned company in the country.
I did not know that.
Publix is owned by its employees. And I defy you to find bad customer service in that store. It was in there yesterday. I said, well, I can't even remember what I was looking for. Yeah, I was looking for egg noodles. The guy was stocking the shelf. He said, one second, let me show you. And he took me to the... He didn't say over on 6 on the left-hand side halfway. He said, allow me to take you to show you where they are. And I think Rich Logis is the best support I can find here, that Publix is truly an anomaly, and we can create anomalies every day with the Publix model.
You're right, Larkin. I agree. And Ed, you're absolutely right. The model of Rich Loges is what he did with his business. And Mark Andel, rising from the ashes after a bad experience with China, taking his business and creating the Made in America store. That we need new ideas. I think that what I've been seeing in the last few weeks with our president-elect is that he's going to bring people to the table that have never been asked to be at the table before. And he's going to take them to task. And no matter if it's a small business, we want them to rise. There's nothing more depressing than riding down the highway and seeing all these closed stores and places that manufactured things now up for sale, for rent, available signs. It's absolutely depressing. But he's talking about focusing on the 70,000 companies that left America. How can we attract them back? So I think we have to, you know, keep after him, respect what he's trying to do, encourage all the people that he has around them, because we can't continue to do what we did, we went through in the last 25, 30 years.
Ed, it's Rich here again. You know, you made a comment before about, you know, trusting president-elect. And one of the things that I've said on this show, and I sort of spoke for everyone, hopefully that's okay here, but what I said is that our show is not going to be a show made up of a panel of Donald Trump sycophants. You know, I'm down in Florida with Larkin. I'm what's called an NPA. I don't belong to a political party. Yes, full disclosure, I did change my registration temporarily during the primary because Florida is a closed state. You can't vote in the primary as NPA, so I did change it. And I changed it right back as soon as the primary was over. So I think this is what people get here as content on this show are a lot of ideas and ways that we communicate and convey these ideas that are actually quite unique in political talk radio. So you coming on to give this perspective. One thing as a lawyer, as an attorney, I want to ask you about. You know, you mentioned the president before, and one of the things that is maybe as disappointing as anything about President Obama's 8 years is that the president is the first president in our history who is publicly undermining the president-elect. And I've said on this show before that I think the character of a man and a woman, the true character, it comes out in defeat, not victory. And I really think we're seeing, you know, the old saying about the emperor being naked. This has never been perhaps truer in the modern era than right now. And I think when as a lawyer, you know, you guys talk a lot about intent in law. And I think when you look at the intent of the president and what the expected intent is of the president-elect, the background of a person tells you an awful lot, in my opinion, about how he or she is going to govern. And the president came from a world of, you know, community organizing and activism. You know, the world where the people who inhabit that world believe that you should never leave anyone alone. And I think all of us here, we kind of come from the world, the mindset of, you know, I leave you alone, you leave me alone, and we just, you know, we exercise our freedoms and our constitutional liberties. So I think the president-elect's intent, what gets him out of bed in the morning, is going to be vastly different and probably a polar opposite of President Obama. I don't think necessarily we should look at presidents as maybe what they get right and wrong all the time, because it's a very complex job, I imagine, and a lot of decisions have to be made with very little information. But I do think that I think when you look at President Obama, I think it's very clear that over his 8 years, what drove him politically and what got him out of bed in the morning were a lot of these activist social issues that, frankly, don't really put any money in anyone's pockets except the people who are perpetrating that stuff. And that's what the modern American progressive movement really is about. And in my opinion, it's the most anti-American movement that we've ever seen in our country's history. And those are the people who went out in the tens of millions to elect Hillary Clinton. So people have to understand that political differences aside, You know, we need to look at whom do we want picking our government in the future? And that's a theme for our listeners, and I'm going to keep running with. And, you know, we want people who live in the real world picking our government, you know, or do we want people who come from a world that is simply just not in alignment with reality? So, Ed, thanks for, you know, for coming on here, and let's have you on again and spread the word about our show, please.
Well, I was privileged to come on. I'm privileged to be here talking with you gentlemen to express different ideas. And it's ironic you said emperor because there was a nice pamphlet put out by an organization called the Emperor President, which they labeled Obama some time ago. And, yeah, I agree. You know, here's a guy who was supposed to be a constitutional lawyer who just ripped up the Constitution completely, trampled on it, stepped on it, and hopefully we'll have a change. Hopefully he'll – the only reason, big reason that I voted for Trump – there's a number of reasons, but the primary reason I wanted Trump in was, boy, I needed somebody on the Supreme Court to replace Scalia, who was a staunch conservative, not a constructionist that, you know, it's an organic document that we can change it with the times. That's not what the Constitution ever was. It is what it is, and Scalia was a strict constructionist. Stick to the Constitution, guys. It's the best thing you're ever going to have in the rest of our lives. Stick to the Constitution.
God bless you, Ed. Everyone listening, I want to thank you all for tuning in. I want to thank all of our sponsors who will be acknowledged each day during our radio broadcast. And I want to say thank you to Ed Bezdetsky for being our guest today. I want to say thanks to Larkin Connolly, Rich Logis, and Mark Andel. This has been a very interesting discussion. And by the way, Ed, this is a place like this where we get more done. Because a few people are speaking, sometimes we have callers and guests. More things are said to help America than to hurt America. And I'm looking forward to making sure that this new administration does not go off our way of thinking. Whether it's getting people to own their own local stores, getting them to own conglomerates. We have a store in the Philadelphia area, Redner's, and the Publix in Florida. We have to do something to get people together so that America is great once again. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in. We will have a rebroadcast of our today's program up on the air in about 2 hours, and we will email it to our 23,000 people. And if you would like to be on our email list, just go to AmericanWorkersRadio.com and sign up on our guest list. Thanks for tuning in. Once again, thanks to Ed Bezdetsky for being with us today. Ed, I'll make sure you get a copy of today's broadcast.
Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Have a great one, Larkin. Until next Wednesday. And by the way, all of our listeners, I'll be back here Saturday morning at 11. Basha will be back tomorrow and Friday. Until Saturday at 11, best wishes to you.
Have a great week, guys.
Thank you very much for allowing me to discuss unions with somebody from New Jersey.
Hey, Ed, the only difference between Larkin and Rich is about 60 degrees and 2 foot of snow. I'm in Buffalo.
Talk to you all soon. God bless.
Right, thank you.
Dovidenia.